And good afternoon to you. Certainly good to see you here on this Sabbath day. Rained a little bit on me coming back, but not bad. Turned out to be a very nice day, actually. We do have some prayer requests. Mr. James Young, who attends in Rome, asked that we pray for his father-in-law, Paul Edgar. He's an older gentleman. I think he's in his 90s. I'm not sure. I have met him before, and I can't remember how old he is, but he has gangrene on one of his feet, and they're going to have to amputate. But the primary problem is he's been throwing up blood, and they say it's coming from, they think, several different sources. So he's in very, very bad shape. I stopped by on my way down to Rome, or at Rome, actually, to visit Mrs. Beam. Kathleen Beam is a longtime member, dates back many, many years, and she's in a nursing home there. And James Taylor called me last Sunday, and I went down Sunday to see her because she was very, very near death. She had that death rattle, as the grandchildren put it, and so forth, and was really struggling. And I anointed her, and I called a couple of times this week to check on her, and then went by today to see her. And each time they said she was setting up as she was today, and eating and doing a lot better. She's certainly not out of the woods. She's 94, I believe it is. She's 90-something, and I think it's 94. So please remember Mrs. Beam in your prayers as well. We do have some reminders here about Beyond Today program tomorrow, When Evil Walks In, and a reminder about the online Bible study this coming Wednesday, September the 5th at 7:30. And Mr. Holliday included an announcement that I had sent him about Jeff and Tina Keith. Tina has suffered from aplastic anemia, which attacks your lymph glands, and she has suffered just horribly for the last 3.5 years. They have a little 2.5-year-old son that they adopted that is just an absolute ball of fire. I mean, he's just energetic and just runs everywhere. And poor Tina has suffered so much, she barely can get up. As a matter of fact, I sat on the couch to anoint her because she can't kneel, and it hurts me to kneel at this point. So anyway, I sat on the couch and I anointed her, and her husband Jeff and I both had to help her up off of the couch because she said she wanted to walk me to the door. She hardly slept at night. She was just really, really suffering. She might sleep 30 minutes, sometimes even up to an hour, but she'd wake up with this just racking pain in her whole body. You have lymph nodes and lymph glands all over your system. She said her elbows hurt and her wrist, and, you know, just all over from the problems that she had. Plus, by the way, and I will ask you to pray about this, she's been passing numerous kidney stones. I know Dave Mink and many of you really have compassion and sympathy upon somebody that does that. She actually passed 4 within an hour and a half one day. This was, I believe, last week or week before last, I think. And she passed 3 kidney stones in an hour, and then a half hour later passed the 4th one. She did pass one since I was there this past Wednesday. But she said she walked in the kitchen after she saw me go out the door, and she just felt something just release from her, like something just snatched something out of her body. And I talked to her on the way to Rome today, and I talked to her before as well, Thursday, I guess. Jeff called me, her husband, and said she's doing just absolutely fabulous. Tina feels good, said she slept all night, and he said that's the first time I have ever heard her snore, that she slept so soundly that she snored. And so he was just thrilled. And then, like I said, I talked to her going down to Rome today and asked her how she was doing. She said, "Oh, Mr. Cowan, I am just fantastic." She said, "I got down and I scrubbed the kitchen floor. I've been out milking the goats. I've been working in the garden." She said, "I feel fantastic." She did say, "I passed 1 kidney stone, but it wasn't nearly as bad as the rest of them were, and it was a whole lot better." So she was just really thankful and praising God. So remember them in your prayers, because they do absolutely, you know, need your prayers, and I know that God has healed her, and I know that it will continue. Also, please remember to pray for Victoria Graham. Victoria is back in Erlanger. She had ovarian cancer about a year ago and had that removed, and now cancer has come back apparently in several places through the PET scan that they did and the CAT scan. They think she's got four or five places on her bowels and one underneath her liver and so forth, but she's in an awful lot of pain. I talked to her husband today coming back here, and she's in a lot of pain. They have put a tube down her throat because she's been throwing up. So they put a tube down her nose and into her stomach to drain her stomach. But they are planning on going in and putting a tube in her stomach so that they can just get to it that way. And I asked if it was a colostomy, and he said no, they just want to drain her stomach because of her nausea and throwing up. She has really been bound up with constipation because of a blockage in her bowels. I went up Wednesday night and anointed her. It was like 12 midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. And that morning, she did, her bowels did move, and she did pass the blockage. But now, apparently, it has come back. And so, please remember Victoria. Her address is 5700 Fisk, F-I-S-K, Avenue in Chattanooga. That's Victoria Graham, like a graham cracker. I don't know the zip code, but I'm sure she would appreciate your prayers and visits. She's in room 7080 in Erlanger. Then it gives a breakdown here of the upcoming calendar events. Of course, the Holy Days, as Ted was talking about, the Kingdom of God seminar will be next Sabbath at 2:30 here in this hall. And then September the 17th, we will have two services for the Feast of Trumpets beginning at 10:30 and then 2:30. And then September 26th, the Day of Atonement here in this hall. And September 29th, the services are canceled because of the feast. And then September 30th is the first opening night of the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day. And October the 6th, services will be canceled here as well. And then October 13th, we will have services once again back from the Feast of Tabernacles here in this hall at 2:30. And then it gives us a breakdown of where each of these holy days are held. So be sure and keep this announcement so that you know. We had an announcement from the home office. Says, has your feast change just have your feast plans changed over the summer? If you registered for the feast and are now going to a different site, or if you have never registered with your local festival advisor and know now where you will attend, please see your festival advisor today. All U.S. and Canadian sites are available except for Lake George. Please confirm before transferring to an international site if you have not previously registered there. Successful planning for the feast, of course, is dependent upon the accurate numbers that are going to be there. So please remember the online members, it says, and if you want to, you can go to feast.ucg.org, and it gives you updates and so forth there. Okay. I'll ask Mr. Dance to come back up and lead us in another hymn, and then we'll have the sermon. I bring you greetings from Mr. Holliday. He's back at the home office. They're having a leadership weekend, and he has, I've forgotten now how many classes he's going to be taking during this time period. Sounds very, very profitable, so I certainly hope so, and I hope all of you will remember to pray about it. I have a letter written to an insurance company, and it says, I'm writing in response to your request for additional information in Block 3 of the accident report form. I put poor planning as the cause of my accident. You asked for a fuller explanation, and I trust the following will be sufficient. I am a bricklayer by trade. One day, on the day of the accident, I was working alone on the roof of a new six-story building. When I completed my work, I found that I had some bricks left over, which weighed later were found to be slightly in excess of 500 pounds. Rather than carry the bricks down by hand, I decided to lower them in a barrel by using a pulley, which was attached to the side of the building on the sixth floor. Securing the rope at ground level, I went up on the roof, swung the barrel out, and loaded the bricks into it. Then I went down and untied the rope, holding it tightly to ensure a slow descent of the bricks. You will note in block 11 of the accident report form that I weigh 175 pounds. Due to my surprise at being jerked off of the ground so suddenly, I lost my presence of mind and forgot to let go of the rope. Needless to say, I proceeded at a very rapid rate up the side of the building, and in the vicinity of around the third floor, I met the barrel, which was now proceeding downward at an equal impressive speed. This explains the fractured skull, minor abrasions, and broken collarbone as listed in Section 3 of the accident report form. Slowed only slightly, I continued my rapid ascent, not stopping until my fingers of my right hand were two knuckles deep into the pulley. Fortunately, by this time, I had regained my presence of mind and was able to hold on tightly to the rope in spite of beginning to experience a great deal of pain. At approximately the same time, however, the barrel of bricks hit the ground and the bottom fell out of the barrel. Now devoid of the weight of the bricks, the barrel weighed approximately 50 pounds, and I refer you again to my weight. As you can imagine, I began a rapid descent down the side of the building. In the vicinity of the third floor, I met the barrel coming up. This accounts for the two fractured ankles, broken tooth, and several lacerations of my legs and lower body. Here my luck began to change slightly. The encounter with the barrel seemed to slow me enough to lessen my injuries when I fell on the pile of bricks, and fortunately only three vertebrae were cracked. I'm sorry to report, however, as I lay there on the pile of bricks in pain and unable to move, I again lost my composure and presence of mind. I let go of the rope, and I lay there watching the empty barrel begin its journey back down into me. This explains the two broken legs, and I hope this answers your inquiry. You know, we laugh, but doesn't it seem like sometimes life is like that? That we have what's known as a vicissitude of life, just a roller coaster that we go up and down, we go up and down, and we reach this real high and great joy and excitement and happiness, only to plummet down in the bottom again. Well, somebody a whole lot smarter than you and I came up with a solution to your problems, an answer to your frustrations, an answer that would give you the total, complete answer to life itself. This was the smartest man that has ever lived on the face of the earth outside of Jesus Christ. His name, as you know, was Solomon. Because Solomon experienced an off-again, on-again type of life, perhaps child-rearing problems, job problems, I don't know, but we face a whole multitude and a host of problems in our life. Most of us seem to think that if I just had more money, all of my problems would be solved, everything would end. If I could just get a 30% raise, then that would be the end of my problems. Does lasting joy and peace and happiness seem to be an elusive dream, kind of like the carrot before the donkey, you know, that just keeps following and following and following and never seems to get to it? Isn't life so often very frustrating and seemingly no answers? Solomon gives us the answers. I want to read today from a book that Solomon wrote in the Bible that actually used to be required to be read in ancient Israel during the Feast of Tabernacles. It is the book of Ecclesiastes. And I think and I hope as we go through it, we'll understand why this was read at the Feast of Tabernacles. Today I want to read from the Living Bible. I am not a proponent of the Living Bible. Normally I do not recommend the Living Bible because it is not literally a translation from the original scriptures. It's where somebody reads the scripture and then they said, okay, here's what they're trying to say. So they paraphrase it into their own words. And I would only recommend the Living Bible for the book of Ecclesiastes and for the Song of Solomon and perhaps for Proverbs. There's some of the Proverbs, I think, that are just outstanding in the Living Bible. But other than that, no. I do not recommend it, period. Ecclesiastes 1, beginning in verse 1. The word of the preacher, the son of David, the king of Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It's just worthless, he said. He looked at life and he said, man, this is a bummer. This is bad. I don't like it. This is not the way to go. What profit has a man, in verse 3, from all of his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down, and it hastens to the place where it arose. And the wind goes toward the south, and it turns around toward the north, and the wind whirls about continuously, and it comes again on its circuit. All of the rivers run into the seas, and the sea yet is not full. The place from which, to which the rivers come, and they return again, talking about the rain cycle. All things are full of labor. Man, life's hard. You got a rough road to hoe, so to speak. And he said, all things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. No matter how much you've got, no matter how much you hear, no matter how much of what, nothing seems to satisfy. That which has been is what will be, and that which is done is what shall be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything that can be said, see, this is new? The Queen of Sheba gave Solomon an airplane of some type, called it a flying machine. She also gave him some type of solar battery. And there's indications that they used to have some form of computer, not a lot like we do today, but things that could calculate and different things like this. He said, there's nothing new under the sun. It's already been in ancient times before us, and there's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are come by those who will come after us. Then in verse 12, I, the preacher, Solomon, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all that was done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have seen all of the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and a grasping for wind. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that what is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have obtained greatness. I have gained more wisdom than all those who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And in verse 17, I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I perceive that this also is a grasping for wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So obviously Solomon thought life was a bummer. Solomon thought, this life is tough. This life's hard. You've got a lot of frustrations and a lot of trials and tests. And so many of us would agree with him. In the second chapter, in verse 1, he says, so what is the answer then? Is it just to talk yourself into being happy, to just laugh and giggle and party all the time and this and that? In verse 1, Ecclesiastes 2, I said to myself, come now, self, be merry. Enjoy yourself to the full. But you know, I found this too was futile. For it's silly to be laughing all the time. What good does it do? He said, nope, that didn't work. I tried to pick yourself up by your bootstrap philosophy, and that wasn't there. I couldn't find my bootstrap or something, but it didn't work. I just kept falling down every time I did it. So he said, okay, what about happiness in the bottle? A lot of people seek joy and happiness in a bottle, in verse 3. So after a lot of thinking, I decided to try the road of drink, while still holding steadily to my course of seeking wisdom. Next, I changed my course again and followed the path of folly, so that I could experience the only happiness most men have throughout their lives. Well, that didn't work. Drinking's not the solution. The path of folly's not the solution to anything. If anything, they both bring on a new set of problems. And Solomon said, well, that didn't work. I couldn't find the answer. I couldn't find the solution, and so forth. Then in verse 4 of chapter 2, then I tried to find fulfillment in inaugurating great public works, homes, vineyards, gardens, and parks and orchids, orchards for myself. That's where part of the problem lies, as we're going to see later. This was not done for someone else. It was done for Solomon. So he said he had all of these things and reservoirs to hold the water to irrigate my plantations. Next, I bought slaves, both men and women, and others were born and within my household, and also bred a great many herds. Oh, if I could just have a ranch. If I just had a whole herd of cattle. If I could have lived back in the old West, and if I could have done this and done that. He said, I had great herds and flocks, more than any king before me. Scholars, and I don't have any idea where they come up with this, but have estimated some of them, Solomon's wealth, to be greater than every man, woman, and child in the United States of America, including the government, that one man had that kind of wealth. He certainly had more than any other human being has ever had, and yet he said, that's not where it's at. That's not where you find the solutions to life. Probably 90-something percent of us sitting here, if we're honest with ourselves, we think, well, if I just had more money, if I had this or if I had that, boy, if I had this new car, if I had that kind of a sports car and I could drive it up to school, man, all the kids would, boy, man, if I had this or if I had that. Well, Solomon had it. And he said, that's not where it's at. That is not the answers that you're looking for in life. And I have picked out 12 that we're going to go through, hopefully, as we go through these chapters. So he said he became greater than any king before me, and I remained clear-eyed so that I could evaluate all these things. And in verse 10, anything I wanted I took, and I did not restrain myself from any joy. But as I looked at everything I had tried, it was all so useless, a chasing of the wind. And there was nothing really worthwhile anywhere. It just doesn't seem that any physical thing can bring lasting joy and lasting peace and happiness. Solomon pretty well tried it all. You'd be hard-pressed to think of something that Solomon didn't already do. He had 1,000 wives and concubines. He bought anything, everything that he wanted. He created one of the 7 wonders of the ancient world, the Babylonian hanging gardens. And he had everything he wanted. He could not think of one thing that he had not gotten physically. And he said, it's like trying to grab the wind. It's just, you know, it's just not there. It's just, you can't control it. Good things, bad things. He tried it all. It didn't matter. The answer was not there. Next, he gets into things that do bring true and lasting happiness. And maybe this book of Ecclesiastes was written and required to be read during the Feast of Tabernacles because it is a solution to life's many frustrations and to life's problems, a solution that's going to be presented in the millennium. And I came up with 12 points, as I mentioned, that this book gives the answers to your frustration. Answer number 1, gain wisdom. Gain wisdom. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 12 through 16. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 12. Now I began a study of the comparative virtues of wisdom and folly, and anyone else would come up with the same conclusion I did, that wisdom is of more value than foolishness, just as light is better than darkness. For the wise man sees while the fool is blind. And yet I noticed that there was one thing that happened to the wise and to the foolish alike. Just like the fool will die, so will I. And so what value is there in all of my wisdom? Then I realized that even wisdom is futile. For the wise and the fool both die, and in their days they come to will be long forgotten. But wisdom is the first thing that Solomon says we are to seek, and we talked about that just a couple of weeks ago or so about how to have spiritual prayers, and certainly one of the things that we are to pray for is wisdom. But even wisdom itself is not the total answer, as he said. That it's not the final conclusion, it's not the end of all misery, but a lot of misery it does end. Let's be frank with ourselves. Don't we bring an awful lot of suffering and misery on ourselves because of the unwise and foolish decisions that we make and things that we do? Certainly we do. And so having wisdom is certainly a good way to avoid problems and frustrations in your life, and it's a vital part of it. Then in verse 14 through 16, he talks about death, and all of us, probably most, at least with any age on us, have experienced death in our own families, the death of a loved one. And God's truth, wisdom, really does help, and it makes a difference when a family member does die, that we have an understanding of where they are and what is going to happen to them. Then in verse 17 through 23, Solomon pretty well comes to the conclusion that he was so far down that he couldn't even look up, much less come up. And that's the way Solomon felt. But have you ever felt so down and out that you didn't think there was any answer, that everything looked impossible to the way out? Well, the second answer we find in Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 24 through 26. And that is to enjoy your work and enjoy physical things. So I decided that there was nothing better for a man to do than enjoy his food and drink and his job. Y'all all know I enjoy food. You can tell that. I don't know how, but we won't get into that. But anyway, he said, I can't at this moment think of anything even greater than enjoying your food and your drink and your job. Then I realized that even this pleasure is from the hand of God. That according to how you eat, like Ted was talking about earlier, the quality, not just the quantity of how much you eat, but the quality and so forth. For who can eat or enjoy apart from God? For God gives those who please him wisdom, knowledge, and joy. But if a sinner becomes wealthy, God takes the wealth away from him and he gives it to those who please him. So here too, we see an example of foolishness and a chasing after the wind. So he says, enjoy physical things, enjoy your job. We should enjoy our physical job and our spiritual job, because we have a daily job to overcome and develop the character of Jesus Christ and God the Father. Then the third answer we find in Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 1, and that is timing is critical. Many of you could give examples of things in life that have depended on timing. Some things good, that it worked out just perfect, and some things terrible that you just missed out. The proverbial a day late and a dollar short type of thing. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 1. Now, there's a right time for everything. A time to be born, a time to die. A time to plant, a time to harvest. A time to kill, a time to heal, a time to destroy, a time to rebuild. A time to cry, a time to laugh. A time to grieve, a time to dance. A time for scattering stones and a time for gathering stones. A time to hug and a time not to hug. A time to find and a time to lose. A time for keeping and a time for throwing away. A time to tear and a time to repair. A time to be quiet and a time to speak up. A time for loving and a time for hating. A time for war and a time for peace. In other words, there's a right time and a wrong time for almost everything. And doesn't it seem like so often in life we have the wrong timing? It seems like everything comes at us at once and we don't have time to adjust, or we go back and we say, boy, if I'd have known this or that or whatever. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 9 through 13, Solomon talks about a man's work, but he talks about the bad example of it, because he says being a workaholic is not the answer either. You cannot work yourself into happiness. We should enjoy our work, which he said in point number 2, but being a workaholic is just a shield to hide behind. Then in verse 14, he brings out a principle that he'll focus on fully in chapter 5, and that is fear God. He said in verse 14 of chapter 3, "And I know this, that whatsoever God does is final. Nothing can be added to or taken from it. God's purpose in this is that man should fear the all-powerful God." Then in verses 16 through 18, "Moreover, I notice that throughout the earth justice is given way to crime, and even the police courts are corrupt. I said to myself, in due season, God will judge everything man does, both good and bad." So if you're expecting justice because you've been mistreated and you want to go to the courts of the land, you won't and you shouldn't expect to find justice there. You won't find happiness, because usually that's not the way it works out. And in verse 18, "And then I realized that God is letting the world go its own sinful way so that he can test mankind, and so that men themselves will see that they're no better than beasts, to finally bring mankind to repentance, to where they can really see themselves. God has a hands-off policy with this world, and Solomon knew and understood that. People wonder why God let little Timmy die. It wasn't God's fault, and it's not God's fault. And in God's kingdom, little Timmy will not die, but he will be healed, or the accident will be stopped, and God will intervene. In verse 22, "So I saw that there was nothing better for men that they should be happy in their work," point number two, "for that is what they are here for, and no one can bring them back to life and enjoy what will be in the future, so let them enjoy it now." In other words, make the best out of life that you possibly can. Enjoy your work, enjoy your life, do everything you can. So, like, once again, Solomon refers back to answer number two, that we should be happy and find satisfaction in our work, both physical and spiritual, to be excited about growing and overcoming and so forth. And like I said, I believe that this applies in several different directions of doing God's work and the satisfaction of growing and overcoming ourselves, of doing our spiritual work. Ecclesiastes 4 in verse 1 through 6. Ecclesiastes 4 in verse 1. "And I saw that there is nothing better for men than that they should be happy in their work." Again, he goes back to point 2. "For that is what they're here for, and no one can bring them back to life, because, you know, and see the future." I guess we read that, I'm sorry. And then in verse 7, Solomon discusses lonesomeness, and again, getting down and being lonesome. Maybe you have experienced before being so lonesome that you could be in a crowd of people, and yet you feel all alone, like nobody else is there. You ever get that lonesome? Do you ever get that blue and that depressed? In verse 9, Solomon says, "Two can accomplish more than twice as much as one, for the result can be much better. If one falls, the other pulls him up, and if a man falls when he is alone, he's in trouble." Solomon brings out the modern principle of what we call synergism, which is the two or more things functioning as a whole to bring about a greater result than either one can produce by themselves. The term synergy comes from the Greek word meaning working together. The sum of the whole is greater than the sum of each individual part. In verse 13 through 16, he said, "It's better to be a wise young person than a foolish old king." And he talks about the past and trying to go back. "Well, if I'd only been born rich, if I had this or if I had that, boy, I would have power and I would have respect and all of these things." Answer number 4 is found in Ecclesiastes 5, beginning in verse 1 through 7. Fear God. Don't make dumb and foolish promises, he says. So when you talk to God in verse 4 and vow to him that you will do something, don't delay in doing it, for God has no pleasure in fools. Keep your promises to him. If you promise God you're going to fast 3 days, don't fast 2 days. Do what you promise God. Don't allow physical circumstances to come up. Don't promise God that you're going to do something and then not do it. He says in verse 5, "It's far better not to say that you'll do something than to say you will and then not do it. In that case, your mouth is making you sin. Don't try to defend yourself by telling the messenger of God that it was all a mistake to make a vow. That would make God very angry, and he might destroy your prosperity. Dreaming instead of doing is foolishness, and there is ruin in a flood of empty words. Fear God instead. So the wise advice here is do what you're supposed to do. It's just really that simple. Keep your word, do what God expects, obey God, fear God, love God. In verse 8 of Ecclesiastes 5, 8 and 9, we find that in that fear we need to trust God. We need to put our faith and our confidence in him, that we trust God to do what is best for each and every one of us. Solomon says, don't get bent out of shape over politics, whether that be local, national, or even among the church or whatever. I get more emails about political mess. And I don't know. I think I stated one time before, you know, we pray just like Jesus Christ commanded us. We pray thy kingdom come, and then we try to do everything we can to delay his coming, that we want this person in office so that this nation, so that this world can go on in the filth and the slop that it is. And so we hope, you know, that so-and-so is elected so that God's kingdom will be delayed. I mean, to me, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, in verse 10 through 17, he addresses financial matters that, again, talk about fearing God, trusting God, to give you money, and that you give money to God, because money will not bring happiness. Verse 10 through 12, he said, he who loves money shall never have enough. I guess he was speaking firsthand, because here he had all this money worth of trillions upon trillions of dollars, apparently, and the foolishness of thinking that wealth brings happiness. And again, though, I bet if we're honest, probably 90% of the people in this room think you would be happier. That's all it would take if you just had more money, or a bigger house, or this or that, or a nicer car, or whatever it might be. He said, that doesn't bring happiness. The more you have, the more you spend. And according to financial figures in the U.S., every man, woman, and child spends 10 to 20% more than their income. That's why the huge credit card debt and so forth that we have. The more you have, the more you spend, right up to the limits of your income. Well, we've passed that. So what is the advantage of wealth except perhaps to watch it as it runs through your fingers? The man who works hard sleeps well, whether he eats little or much, but the rich must worry and suffer insomnia, afraid somebody's going to steal it or take it, or stock market's going to crash and he's going to lose it. Then in verse 13 through 17, he discusses foolishness and unwise investments and decisions and how it brings heartache on us. Then in verses 18 through 20, we find the fifth answer to your frustrations, and that is to be content with what you have. Be content with what you have. Verse 18, well, one thing at least is good, that it is for a man to eat well, as we heard earlier, drink a good glass of wine, accept his position in this life, enjoy his work, whatever his job may be, and however long the Lord may let him live. And of course, it's very good if a man has received wealth from the Lord. He said, that's fine, that's beautiful, that's wonderful, nothing wrong with it. And the good health to enjoy it, which of course is more important than the wealth itself. To enjoy your work and to accept your lot in life. That is indeed a gift from God. The person who does that will not need to look back with sorrow on his past, for God gives him joy. He's beginning to see some joy in his life. He's beginning to find contentment, as he said, because he, just like the Apostle Paul said, that he was content in whatsoever state he found himself. He both knew how to be abased and he knew how to abound. He knew how to suffer hunger and he knew how to suffer abundance. And he knew that he could do all things through Christ, which strengthened him. And so, like Solomon says here, if you want a good, happy, joyous life, Don't be striving after something different. Be content with what God allows you to have, and you might just find, for that matter, that He allows you to have more. That this is a tremendous key to solving your inner frustrations and yearnings. Ecclesiastes 6 goes on and talks about health problems and conditions and talks about winding up broke and poor, but never being satisfied with what you have. And so many people find that state in their life, that they just can't seem to obtain it. In chapter 7, we find yet another answer to your frustrations, and number 6 is to live a clean life. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 1. A good reputation is more valuable than the most expensive perfume. It's something that you cannot buy. And so many times we bring hardship, we bring guilt on ourselves and on our family by doing foolish things, by committing sins and doing things that are foolish. Where if you live a clean life, then you have a good reputation. You obey God. You can't go wrong. You're going to be blessed, and life is going to be a lot more pleasurable. It says in verse 2, it is better to spend your time at funerals than at festivals. In other words, you need to stop and seriously think about life and where your life is going, for you're going to die, he said. And it is a good thing to think about it while there is still time. Sorrow is better than laughter, for sadness has a refining influence on us. Sometimes it's good to go sit in a graveyard and think about the people that lived prior to you. And think about their lives, and so many of them empty and wasted because they did not know God's truth or they did not apply it to their life. And you need to apply it. Yes, a wise man thinks much of death, while the fool thinks only of having a good time now. Boy, it's party, party, and party hardy, and have a party right now. In other words, Solomon said, live your life for tomorrow, not just for the pleasure of sin today. Live like you want to be in God's kingdom. Live like Matthew 6 and verse 33, that you truly do seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and then you will have a reward in the kingdom of God. In verses 5 through 9, he talks about what I call embellishments of character. He says it's better to be criticized by a wise man than to be praised by a fool. For a fool's compliment is as quickly gone as paper in a fire, and it's silly to be impressed by it. Don't let your head get all blown out of shape here and all puffed up, he said. The wise man is turned into a fool by a bribe. It destroys his understanding. Finishing is better than starting. Patience is better than pride. Then he says, don't be quick-tempered in verse 9. That is being a fool. And how many times have we proved ourselves to be a fool because we lose our temper? Temper gets more people into trouble because they don't stop and think. They just get mad. Betty and I were the other day was watching a movie, and it was John Travolta, actually, and he was a young father, and he'd just get angry at the drop of a hat, and it cost him so much trouble, almost cost him his life. He had some gangsters after him and so forth, and it almost got him killed because of his lack of self-control and temperance. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 10, don't long for the good old days, for you don't know whether they were any better than these. And so many people do live in the past. If only, you know. So many times we have this, well, if only this would have happened, or only that wouldn't have happened, or if only I would have done such and such, or if only I would have had the money to do so and so, or this and that, then we think, you know, life would be so totally different. Yes, learn from the mistakes of the past, but we can never go back and try to relive the past. Frankly, so many people have so many marriage problems today because of sins and problems that happened in the past, and we keep resurrecting them, bringing them back up to our mate and this and that. We can't do that. Certainly learn from the past, but do not resurrect it. In verse 11 through 17, Solomon refers back to point one of wisdom, that we have to have wisdom to be able to cope with life and what life throws at us and the trials and the tests that come along. Then he gives a summary in verse 18 of point 4, which was fear God. He said, tackle every task that comes along, and if you fear God, you can expect His blessings. So if you want a good life, you have wisdom, and you fear God. He pretty well summarizes it there, and he said, now if you really want a good, prosperous, wonderful life, he said, then you tackle every task, put your heart into it, whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, and then fear God, and therefore then you can expect His blessing. Verse 21 and 22, he said, don't eavesdrop. You may hear your servant cursing you. You might hear some things that you don't want to hear. For you know how often you yourself curse others. In other words, he's saying, don't gossip, because it will come back on you. It has a way of coming back home to haunt you. It brings misery. It brings problems. It spreads problems. And if you do this, then you're going to reap problems on yourself. It brings misery and has a way of just coming back on you. In verse 26, he said, a prostitute is more bitter than death. May it please God that you escape from her, but sinners don't evade her snares. Some people think, well, if I just had a better sex life, then that would answer all of my frustrations. That's not the answer. He also says that you're just plain stupid if you go outside of your bedroom to seek happiness somewhere else. And in verse 27 through 29, he said, this is my conclusion, says the preacher. Step by step, he said, I came to this result after researching in every direction. 0.1% of men I have interviewed could be said to be wise, but not one woman. Now, I don't know how many people he interviewed one way or the other, but apparently he didn't care for women that much. And I found that though God has made men upright, each has turned to follow his own downward road. That we all wind up doing dumb, stupid things. We wind up sinning. We wind up bringing curses. We wind up bringing problems upon ourselves. And then he said in verse 20, there isn't a single man in all of the earth who is always good and never sins. It's like Romans 6 and verse 23. We all sin. We all make mistakes, both men and women. We all need wisdom. Pray for wisdom. Beseech God for wisdom. Ask for wisdom. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 1 and verse 1. How wonderful to be wise, to understand things, to be able to analyze them and interpret them. Wisdom lights up a man's face, softening its hardness. You notice that? When you gain wisdom, you also gain a tenderness. You also gain a love and a compassion that shows and reflects on your face. Answer number 7, don't worry. Answer to your frustrations, number 7, don't worry. Verses 6 through 8 of Ecclesiastes 8. Yes, there is a time and a way for everything, going back to point 3. Though man's troubles lies heavily upon him, for how can he avoid that which he doesn't know is going to happen? No one can hold back his spirit from departing. No one has the power to prevent the day of his death. For there is no discharge from that obligation and that dark battle. Certainly a man's wickedness is not going to help him then. He said, don't worry about things you cannot control. Like Christ said, don't take anxious thought for what you're going to wear or what you're going to put on or what you shall eat, because God knows you have need of all of those things. So he said, don't worry about those things. Certainly don't worry about things that are beyond your control and something that you cannot take care of. Verse 9 through 13, Ecclesiastes 8. I have thought deeply about all that goes on here in the world, where people have the power of injuring one another. How many times do we hurt one another with wounds that are very, very deep, with wounds that really do hurt us? I heard of someone just recently that is really struggling financially, and a church member gave them some money. And then later they came up and said, oh, that was just a loan. I need that back. And they don't have it. And they felt terrible because they thought that it was a gift that was given to them. And so many times we can hurt someone by things we say and the way we treat people and the way that we act toward them. Verse 9 through 13, he said, I thought deeply where people have the power of injuring each other, and I have seen wicked men buried, and as their friends returned from the cemetery, having forgotten all the dead man's evil deeds, and these men were praised in the very city where they had committed their many crimes. He says, how odd. And some people are, quote, afraid to speak evil of the dead. But he said, you know, here the man was horrible. Nobody liked him. But then when he dies, everybody has all this good stuff to say about him. Because God does not punish sinners instantly. People feel it's safe to do wrong. Because you might not suffer from a sin that you commit right this split second, that God doesn't come down and take his big hammer and hit you over the head with it, then you think, well, I got away with that. No, you didn't. You did not get away with it. You cannot get away, quote unquote, with sin. But though a man sins, in verse 12, 100 times and still lives, I know very well that those who fear God will be better off. Now, this is from the wisest man that's ever lived next to Jesus Christ. If you think you know a better route, you can try it, but you're going to wind up in misery. I know, even though a man sinned 100 times and he still lives, I know very well that those who fear God will be better off. Unlike the wicked who will not live long, good lives, their days shall pass away quickly as a shadow because they don't fear God. Here Solomon refers back to point 4 of obeying God, of loving God, of living God's way of life. If you want to have a good, happy, abundant, peaceful, joyful life, God has to be number one in your life. Verse 14, there is a strange thing happening here on earth. Providence seems to treat some men, some good men, as though they were wicked, and some wicked men as though they were good. And this is all very vexing and troublesome, he said to him. Because it seems like sometimes you see the wicked and it looks like they're being blessed. And other times you see people that are really trying and struggling and they're really wanting to be in God's kingdom and they're trying to overcome and they're having to fight everything. And that sometimes is the way life is. Doesn't it seem like many times that the harder you try, the more Satan attacks you? I believe that. I believe the closer that you try to draw to God, I believe the more that you dedicate yourself to God, then Satan is going to come after you with all 8 feet. I mean, he's going to pounce on you like a roaring lion. But God promises if you resist Satan, he will flee from you. And that's an ironclad promise. And he also says, if you will draw near to me, I will draw near to you. And that is an ironclad promise. Number 8, answer is enjoy physical things in balance. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 15. Then I decided to spend my time having fun because I felt that there was nothing better on all the earth than that a man should eat, drink, and be merry. And with the hope that this happiness would stick with him in all the hard work that God gives to mankind everywhere. He said, you know, I thought I'd try to have a little fun, and that's good, that's great. He said, you know, relaxation and so forth. Enjoy physical things. Enjoy them in abundance. Enjoy them in balance. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 1 through 4, he said, don't blame God. If you've got problems and you think that God is cursing you and God is after you, he said, don't be psychotic. God's not after you. We're bringing those things on ourselves. Solomon concludes through chapter 9 and verse 7. He says this on this point. So go ahead, eat, drink, and be merry, for it makes no difference to God. Wear fine clothes with a dash of cologne. So in other words, enjoy life. And that's good. You should enjoy the physical things. Dress up every now and then. Put on the dash of cologne, as Solomon puts it, but enjoy life here on this earth. Number nine, the ninth answer, is have a happy marriage. Solomon had 1,000 wives and concubines. He never knew and understood what it meant to have a happy marriage. It was like the striving after wind to him. The richest man in our modern day, or at least one of the richest, J. Paul Getty, before he died, made the statement that he would give all of his billions and billions of dollars for just one happy marriage. And he died without experiencing that. Money is not where it's at. Physical things is not the answer. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 9. Live happily with the woman you love through the fleeting days of life. For the wife God gives you is your best reward down here for all of your earthly toil. Having a happy, wonderful, exciting marriage is the number one reward that you are going to have in this life. Think maybe you need to spend a little more time on that marriage? You think you might need to cultivate it a little bit deeper? You think maybe you should spend a little more time with your children to show them that truly you do love them and that you care for them? He said that is your greatest reward in this life, having a happy and wonderful marriage. So I think it's something we should take care of as far as our greatest blessing in this life. Then he mentioned verse 11 and 12, that time and chance, just like Jesus Christ said, can happen to any and all of us. And then Solomon gives a good advice on how to behave on the job in chapter 10 and verse 4. He said, if the boss is angry with you, don't quit. Don't get your temper up. Don't get your fur riled and so forth. He said, a quiet spirit will quiet his bad temper. And this is a wonderful principle that we find in Proverbs 15 and verse 1. A soft answer turns away wrath. And that's the way we should be in our marriage. I think if we practiced that, we wouldn't have the knockdown, drag-out fights that some do. Because a soft answer, as he says here, a quiet spirit will quiet his bad temper. Then in verse 15, he goes on and he says, don't get easily upset, work hard, control your temper. Then the tenth answer that he gives to us is to learn to give and share. Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 1. Learn to give and share. This is something that Solomon had a hard time learning. He amassed everything to himself. He had all these public work things that he did and projects, but it was all for self. And he found out that didn't bring the happiness. That did not bring the joy and satisfaction. That did not answer life's frustrations. Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 1 and 2. Give generously, for your gifts will return to you later. It has a way of coming back. Divide your gifts among many. Show love and outgoing concern to an awful lot of people, for in the days ahead, you yourself may need much help. We don't know what lies in the future. And we may have to go to someone that we help today and ask them for help for ourselves. This was Solomon's problem. He had all this great wealth. He had all this vast, quote, wisdom. And yet he did everything for the self instead of giving and serving and sharing with other people. Number 11. The answer to your frustrations, love life and be thankful. Love life and be thankful. Chapter 11 and verses 7 and 8. It is a wonderful thing to be alive, Solomon said, and it's got an explanation point there. If a person lives to be very old, let him rejoice in every day of his life. But let him also remember that eternity is far longer and that everything down here is futile in comparison. That we need to live our life like we're going to be in God's kingdom tomorrow. that we need to live our life and be thankful every single day, that we accentuate the positive. We don't dwell on the negative. We don't look at the bad things, but we love life, and truly we are thankful. And then he goes on here and he talks to young people, and he says specifically to young people in Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 9 through 12, he said, young man, verse 9 through chapter 12 and verse 8. He said, young man, it's wonderful to be young. Enjoy every minute of it. Do all you want to do. Take in everything. Enjoy life. But realize that you must account to God for everything that you do. So banish grief and pain. Don't bring sorrow on yourself with illicit sex and drugs and smoking and all this drinking and all this nonsense. He said, live your life for God, fear Him, love Him, and as you're going to account to God for everything that you do, so banish grief and pain. Don't bring this stuff on yourself, but remember that youth, while with a whole life before it, can make some serious mistakes, and truly we can. And we pay for them many times for the rest of our life. Then in chapter 12 and verse 1, don't let the excitement of being young cause you to forget about your Creator. Honor Him in your youth before the evil years come, when you'll no longer enjoy living. It will be too late then to try to remember Him when the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are dim in your old eyes, and there is no silver lining left among your clouds. For there will come a time, in verse 3, when your limbs will tremble with age, and your strong legs will become weak, and your teeth will be too few to do their work, and there will be blindness too. So in verse 4, then let your lips be tightly closed while eating when your teeth are gone, and you will waken at dawn with the first note of the birds, but you yourself will be deaf and tuneless and with a quivering voice. So he said, don't wait till it's too late. You serve God now. You want a happy, prosperous, beautiful, wonderful life? Then you serve God in your youth, and then God will guide you, direct you, and bless each step that you take. In verse 5, you will be afraid of heights, of falling, because you get old and brittle and bones break and this and that. A white-haired, withered old man, dragging himself along without sexual desire, standing at death's door and nearing his everlasting home as mourners go along down the street. Yes, remember your Creator now while you are young, before the silver cords of life snap and the golden band is broken, before the pitcher is broken at the fountain and the wheel is broken at the cistern, and then the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. So he tells young people, enjoy life. Live it to the full. Live it to the absolute brim full, but live it God's way and enjoy life by obeying God. Brings us to point number 12. Point number 12. Solomon concludes all of these points and summarizes them together. And he says, fear and obey and love God, because our reward, our happiness, is coming in another world and time, a time that is pictured by the awesome Feast of Tabernacles, and that's probably why God inspired it to be read then. Ecclesiastes 12 and verses 13 and 14. Here is my final conclusion, he said. This is it. This summarizes everything. If you want the answer to your frustrations, here we find it in summary. Here is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey His voice, for this is the entire duty of man. I believe the King James says this is the whole of man, that to be a whole, entire person, to have the joy and the happiness and the peace, we have to fear God and obey His commandments. For God, in verse 14, will judge us for everything we do, including every hidden thing, good and bad. So the conclusion is to fear God, to love God, to obey God, because this is the only way that you can be a whole, entire, happy, person. We've seen 12 different keys that Solomon, the richest man that's ever lived, next to Jesus Christ, said. Number one, he said, seek wisdom. Number two, find happiness and fulfillment in your work, both physical and spiritual. Number three, timing is very critical in your life. Number four, fear God. Number five, learn to accept the state and standard of your life that you are in right now. Number six, live a clean life, a wholesome life. Number seven, do not worry. Number eight, enjoy the physical things in balance. Number nine, have a happy, wonderful marriage. Number 10, learn to give and to share. And number 11, love life and be thankful all the days of your life. And number 12, the entire solution, fear, obey, and love God. And this is the only way to be a whole, happy, and blessed person. This book of Ecclesiastes, I think, contains vital keys to answer your frustrations and the frustrations of this world. Keys that you need to meditate on, that you need to think about, and find ways of how they apply in your life.